6:43, 17 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Thursday morning around these parts. That means it's time to talk to our friend Mike Strain, Dr. Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, and a well-respected veterinarian on the North Shore. How you doing, Mike?
Man, I am doing great. How are you, Tommy?
I'm well. I got to ask you, I heard you do something on a commercial that just surprised the heck out of me, and it was about dogs getting sunburned. Did I hear that right?
Well, they can get sunburned, but the heat stress can really get them quickly, especially right now. You know, if you take a dog and put him in the back of a white pickup truck and you be driving through the field, they can still have heat stress and heat stroke, mm-hmm. and they can get burned from the sun. So especially if they're light-skinned, pale-skinned, you know, with white hair. Mm-hmm. And, of course, oftentimes in the summer, a lot of people will shave their dogs. The long-haired dogs can get shaved, and that can expose them to the sun. And so just be careful with that. But the heat stroke, heat stress is a much bigger problem. Do not leave your animal in the car, you know, ever. Do not just run in and leave the animal, or little children either, but leave that dog in the car, because they will get hot very, very, very quickly. A lot of dogs, especially indoor dogs, they're not used to the heat at all. And if they are out on the porch, you need to have, you know, cool water, shade, and preferably a fan.
I got a text the other day asking me to ask you, and I presume they're listening now, Mike, about this. You talked about muddy gums or something, or some indication when the dog is hot.
Yeah, muddy.
Tell me about
that. In other words, when you look at the gums, that's a medical term that we use. They will look a little dark. They will look will not look uniform. So you think about muddy looking water, and then you look at the gums, instead of being nice and pink, they will be darker. They will be dark red. And you can obviously tell that you have a problem. It's one of the things that we do in the field. You can rapidly assess a patient, whether it's a dog or a horse or whatever, just looking at the gums. The other thing that we do is called a Blanche test, where we, you know, use your thumb and you press against the gum and see how quickly it refills. Mm. And it should refill like in, you know, a second or 1.5 seconds. You get out there to 3 seconds, you have serious cardiovascular problems.
Like they do with humans, almost, with the nails, kind of like I said.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, same thing. That's
so
exactly
I know,
right.
So I know some
thing.
Stuff,
but
Mike.
Now is the time to stay cool.
I know
now
some stuff,
time.
Don't I?
Yes, you do.
Well,
yes, you do.
Not much, a little bit,
so
but a little bit.
I was headed to Dallas to meet with the EPA today, but my flight has now been canceled. And so, yeah.
What
so
did
we're
you
do
to make that happen?
Well, I guess I slept too hard, but, you know, we had this set up. We're meeting with a team, our corresponding team in Dallas. You know, for the EPA, the Department of Ag and Forestry, we are the arm of the EPA. We're dealing with all restricted use chemicals mm-hmm. in the state. And it's through a memorandum of understanding between the Environmental Protection Agency and I in person of the commissioner. And so if you think about the termite spray, if you think about what's being sprayed for mosquitoes, if you think about any type of herbicide, pesticide, fungicide, anything, we work closely with the EPA. And so, you know, we have regular meetings, and we have the new regional administrator, Scott Mason, there in Dallas. He's a wonderful guy to work with. And so we go there, and we go through all the issues from the waters of the U.S., and we're talking about chemicals, compliance issues, air updates on emissions. And, of course, we will be also bringing over discussion about trying to expedite the approval of the baits for the feral swine. That is kind of in limbo, and it went from taking 18 months and a few hundred thousand dollars to 8 years and $8 million, and we got to get that back on track. And so, you know, with all the things that we work on, including one, drone usage and uniformity and labeling, so a good discussion, but the rebook and the flight would get me there after the meeting, so that's not going to work.
No.
So we're going to be doing it virtual today. So
there you go.
We have a setup for that. But you know what? Virtual is 90%, but there in person is 100%. And for mm-hmm. our federal counterparts and all of the alphabet agencies that we work with, you know, I really believe in those personal relationships, especially when, you know, things go sideways on whatever issue it might be, that personal relationship straighten things out.
What is the problem with the swine thing, with the feral swine? Because I thought this was pretty benign, but it was a great way to eliminate, or at least to keep these things from breeding. Tell me about what the EPA's problem is.
Well, the EPA said that the toxicant used, which is sodium nitrite. Now, sodium nitrite, if you had bacon and with your breakfast this morning, you had some sodium nitrite. It's been around since, you know, pre-Roman times, and it's used universally. But they said since you're going to use it in a manner to which would result in toxicity, then you've got to do complete studies like it's a new compound. And I totally disagree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably been more research done and published and known about sodium nitrate than anything else. And LSU developed a system where they would literally wrap this stuff in a capsule of, and I think it's more like pogey bait, and only the feral swine would eat it. So you would take it, actually bury it in the ground, and they would dig it up and eat it. And then it would, you know, it would kill the pigs, but not other species. It wouldn't affect bear, or there wouldn't be secondary problems like you would have with other toxicants or warfarin. And we were going along well, and then they told LSU, said, look, it's going to cost you, you know, $600,000-$800,000 in fees to register this unless you went through the State Department of Agriculture. In that case, it would be no cost. And so we were well on our way to getting this product approved, developed by LSU with 12-plus years of research. And then they came back and said, no, you got to start over again and go through this whole process. And that's one of the things we're going to push, to look, this is ridiculous. We need this product. Those feral swine cost hundreds of millions of dollars in damage. The last call I had last night, 8 o'clock last night, a friend called me and said, these feral swine have destroyed my fields. And they are overpopulating. Now we estimate we have as many as 750,000 feral swine in the state. And we've got to get a handle on them because they cause hundreds of millions of dollars of damage and carry disease and are a threat. They are a threat, little children, et cetera. I mean, they're dangerous out there, and we've got to do something about them.
So, Mike, when it comes to this stuff, the sodium nitrate or whatever it is, when the pig eats it, it dies. If something eats the pig, it's no danger to what he ever eats the pig, is it?
Generally, no, because you won't get enough concentration of the sodium nitrite from eating the pig. And so what we've done with other things is that they've added dye to the product, and so that if for some reason you would slaughter a wild pig, but you would never eat a wild pig that was sick. You never eat anything that's sick, but you would see a blue discoloration, a blue stain in the flesh. So that's part of that. But what it does is that the pig literally goes to sleep. It's just they just go to sleep is what happens, and they just don't wake up. And so we're careful that there's no secondary kills. And the thing of it is, though, if that pig is up and running, there's no toxic dose in them, and you would not slaughter a pig that you found dead or dying, you know, at all.
Right. I meant more along the lines of like nature, you know, I don't know if you got a pig that drops dead somewhere.
No,
goes
you're
to
not
sleep.
Gonna get that. We're very careful with that. You would not get a secondary dose from consuming the flesh that would be high enough to be lethal. You know, because you're thinking of buzzards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, and other creatures that would eat that flesh. So that, no, it would not affect them. And that's one of the big deals in developing these toxicants. We're still hopeful that the USDA will actually continue its research on an anti-fertility vaccine. And as they've been working on that diligently, that could be delivered via a cookie bait. And that's not science fiction. We vaccinate wild animals for rabies with cookies that have little capsules. So when they eat the cookie, that the vaccine actually is freeze-dried. It becomes activated and goes through their tonsils and vaccinates them for rabies. And that was developed by Rome Mario, and it's used in the United States and across the world. We can develop the same thing for pigs. Then, you know, we can distribute. And you can distribute that, you know, using an aircraft or other vehicles and get, you know, and make them non-fertile, because one female can result in over 300 pigs in 3 years.
That's the approach you're taking with that screw worm, right?
Oh, now screwworms. Yes, now screwworms. Another issue. You saw last night that Secretary Rollins has now suspended the importation of Mexican livestock into the United States. That happened yesterday because the screwworm has again jumped its containment by the Isthmus of Panama. And if you look on the map, that's a small area, and we're very concerned about it moving through Mexico and getting into the United States. And so we are spending dollars. We, you know, we've sent dollars to Mexico to help them to breed more sterile flies, and those sterile flies would then mate with the screwworm flies and stop, you know, the progeny. But it's not enough. So they are building a $300 million facility in Lower Texas to gear up for screwworm sterile flies in case it continues to march towards the border. We have to get a handle on this. And again, because what you've already seen it impacting beef prices already, but it could be, the damage could be in the hundreds of billions. And the thing about this particular pest, it will attack and make sick and kill normal, healthy animals. That's the big deal about this screwworm, and we are gearing up for battle. We're gonna, you know, our goal is to keep it down there at the Isthmus of Panama because it's a tiny area, much less trying to defend it across the entire U.S.-Mexican border. And so we are gearing up. There are ways that we can treat our cattle and our livestock, you know, but it's very costly. But if it gets here, it's estimated it could destroy up to 80% of the wild deer population and other native species. And so we've got to do everything it takes to stop this invasive pest from getting here.
Real quick, scale of 1 to 10, where are you worried at on that screwworm thing?
I'm at a 6 right now, tell you the truth. Right. I am concerned because it is jumping containment in a narrow area. And if it gets up into Mexico and spreads out and starts, you know, the thing about an invasive species is that it takes over the native species and becomes dominant, and it's very difficult to eliminate. And so the best method to fight this is with the sterile flies, not spraying insecticides.
Thank you,
and
Mike.
Then, so, but yeah. Yep.
Got you. We're out of time. So thank you. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Very valuable information. As always, 6:54, 6 till 7. Traffic now, WWL.